And Dr. Berry, I want to assure you that you and your dear wife Jean have been in our prayers over the past weeks since we have learned of your illness, and you will continue to be in the future. And so will you please welcome into our midst today the President of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Dr. Al Berry.
Thank you very much. I hope you won't mind if I take it a little easy and sit today. I'll tell you a little bit about why I find it necessary not to do an awful lot of standing. The legs are not what they have been in the past, and consequently, until the chemo has ended, it makes it a little difficult to walk and to stand. Well, I think this is the fourth such student forum that I've had the privilege of coming and addressing. And I have appreciated every time I've been able to be with you. I'd like to use the time pretty much the same way that we have in the previous forums. I'd like to, first of all, share some information with you. And then the second half, I'd like to give you an opportunity to ask any questions that you may have of me. Dr. Kuhn came along with me for two reasons. He drove. He wanted to drive and let me have the joy of riding in his blazer. But the other thing is, I thought that it might be nice if you did have some questions that you wanted to address to him in the Q&A time. Tough ones, you know, real tough ones. that would certainly be all right, too. And so again, I'm really pleased to be with you. I have a suspicion one of the first things that you would say, well, how is it going health-wise, both with Jean and also with yourself? And without elongating that unduly, I'd like to maybe just give you a little bit of a historic background as to where we presently are. It was in 1991 that Jean was diagnosed with breast cancer. She had a mastectomy, chemotherapy, and was on tamoxifen, I believe, for a while after that. It seemed as though everything was going very well. Usually if a person goes for 5 years, they say that's the benchmark at which you find yourself then saying, well, we've gotten it. In January of this year, though, she began to experience a great deal of pain in the bones. And at first, she thought it was maybe just a little arthritis. I think it was partly denial that it could be coming back. But then when we went into the doctor, we found that the breast cancer had metastasized into the bones. It can either go to the brain, the lungs, the liver, or the bones. And in her particular case, it had gone to the bones. They simply began a process of treating the bones with radiation. She has had, at the present time, 45 radiation treatments. That's no small amount of radiation for a person to put up with. And now she is under chemo. In fact, she's on the same cycle that I am. Every 21 days, she goes in for chemo. I think one of the things that she notices the most, it has a way of wearing you down, because this is the second trip for her. And it has a way of weakness. It makes you weak. I was kind of pleased last night. She always has gotten a great deal of joy when the tricks or treaters came by. And she was really having a great deal of fun last night giving candy to the tricks or treaters. She told me there were 72 that showed up. She even keeps track of them. As far as what is happening with Jean's cancer, the bone cancer, we have not stopped it, but we have retarded it, and the goal will be to continue to work to try to retard the progression of the bone cancer. She has it in her neck, in her back, in her hips, in the rib cage, and in the legs. So I think you can see that when it did come back, it came back with a pretty heavy vengeance. After the convention, 1995 convention, I had all kinds of get up and go. In fact, a lot of people said, man, did you have to get up and go through that convention? You know, it seemed as you were picking up speed rather than slowing down as you moved along. And the first week after the convention, I think there was a certain degree of, you know, kind of after you've had a tough week in tests and what have you. The second week, it kind of continued a little bit, but I just thought it was a normal reaction. I sat down with my staff to assess the convention, and I found that the staff was also going, so it was something that I sort of assumed was natural. The third week after the convention, all at once, the energy just started plummeting in a downward way. And I went into the doctor when I felt that it was becoming something that needed to be checked. And they put me in the hospital and run a variety of tests. And I'll never forget the morning when the doctor came back in and he said, according to the test, we feel that you have one of the various forms of leukemia. And we should begin treatment immediately. Well, you know, that's kind of like getting hit with a Mack truck. You know, you kind of get flattened out a little bit. And so we did begin the treatments. I have now had four of what may be six treatments. There are three different drugs that I'm on, Cytoxan, Adriamycin, and Oncovin. And when they bring those long syringes in, it looks like something they should be giving a horse, you know, not you. And they will go ahead and inject this into your system, and the man sitting next to me one time said, nothing but poison, nothing but poison. Well, you know, that's a real upper lifter. But I have had four of them. On the 21-day cycle, what happens is that for the first 10 days after you've had the chemo, you go down 8, 9, and 10, and this is day 10, you hit the bottom of the barrel. Then you start in an upward cycle, and in the upward cycle, you begin to gain your energy back, and about the time you're beginning to feel very, very good, they tell you, well, now it's time for another chemo treatment. You know, that's kind of a downer type of thing. Whether they will conclude them with four treatments rather than six, the doctor is very pleased with the progress that I have made. I don't know. He will make that decision in about a week and a half. But he is pleased, and he tells me that it will be brought under control. And for this, I thank God. I would have to say that as we shared the fivefold vision statement with the church, and I'll come back and talk a little bit more about that. As we shared the fivefold vision statement with the church, I had any number of people say, well, you know, it'll be easier to get the people into the Word and speaking their faith and being faithful to the Scriptures and working for peace and unity. But the one you're going to have a tough time with is that we are caring and sensitive people over against the needs of others. I think I kind of accepted that. But I would have to tell you that over the past several weeks, the letters and the cards that Gene and I have received from out across the church had just been unbelievable. There's been a caring concern, words of encouragement, prayer support, so much prayer support. Some of them are very cute. One pastor who's 93 years of age and has had leukemia said, if I made it to 93, you can. You know, I got another one that was kind of cute. One of the pastors out in the church said, I guess I can say this and not get myself in trouble. He said, I'm a moderate. I have a suspicion that we would differ on several theological practices, but I did think I should send you a card. So I wrote him back and I said, well, I'm glad that you did send a card. And I just need to tell you, good brother, that I have a suspicion that if we were to sit down around the kitchen table with a couple cups of coffee and start talking, we would find that we have much more in common theologically than we have in discommon. And I never heard from him, but at least he hasn't sent another card. All right. So that's kind of the way it is. The Oncovin is the one that's kind of the pesky one for me. I didn't have a lot of hair to begin with, and the Adriamycin eliminated even some more of that. I became even more Walter-like in my appearance. I found some benefits in it. I only have to shave once every 4 days, you know, and that's really quite nice. I shaved this morning, so it'll be 4 days before I try it again. The Oncovin is a very unusual drug. It makes your hands and your feet tingle at all times. like when you laid on your arm at night, you know, and you wake up and it's asleep, my hands and feet tingle all the time. But then it also makes the legs extremely weak, and that's why they let Dr. Kuhn drive on the yard here. He said, if I'd have done that when I was a student here, I'd have been out. So don't try it, please. But it was good to be able to come today, and that's kind of the how's it going health-wise. What I'd like to do is talk with you a little bit about some observations that I picked up in the process of reading some books when I was staying at home in September. I found that often in the schedule that the President of the Senate has, and I think that others have, you do not have the type of time that you would like to have to read. And so consequently, when I was confined to the house and they told me to stay away from people, that's a hard thing for a people person to do, I was able to read several books. And one of the books that I read was Dr. Herbert Bowman's abbreviated version of Walther's Law and Gospel. Now, when I say that and the profs are here, they're going to tell you, don't read the abbreviated version, read the full version. And I understand why they're saying that, because in the abbreviated version, you will find again and again these little sections where it will make the statement, directly after this follows an extended discourse by Dr. Walther on, or following this point, Walther quotes extensively from Luther. And so you're kind of deprived of that input. But I still found it very interesting as I read through. When I get through reading a book, I go back to the very beginning. I write in the margins all the way through. But when I get through, I go back to the beginning, and I write down four or five observations that I feel I have seen come front and center stage in the book. And I'd like to share with you three of those observations. As I read through Walther's abbreviated version of Law and Gospel, I became a little scared. I became scared that we as a church body do not realize what a blessing it is to have a synod that is a confessional and theological church body. I hear people occasionally putting down being confessional or putting down being theological. And that has been one of the great strengths of our church body in days past. Walther, again and again, of course, is talking about law and gospel. But in the process, as you read your way through the book, Walther really nails down, he doesn't say Missouri, but he says, Synod, recognize what a powerful strength you have had down through the years in being a confessional Lutheran church body. Don't back away from it. Don't become ashamed of it. Read theology. Read the scriptures at the same time with your theology. When I was yet out on the road, and I've kind of come off the road until after the first of the year, I would often, when I would be out for a mission festival or a, anniversary or something, walk into the pastor's study, and I'd look at his books. And as I would read his books, there would be two things that I would notice. Either he hadn't bought a book since he left the seminary, or many of the books that he had placed into his library were the books that he was picking up at the local Bible bookstore on how to make your church grow, how to develop program and theology and scriptural confessional principles was lacking. We went through a period of time in our church body not all that far back when we had some real stress and strain when it came to theology. I need to tell you as seminarians that I place a great deal of value and a great deal of strength in you as you go out into the church and become the type of pastors who are not ashamed to be members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and who are not ashamed to stand for the principles, confessional practices of our church body. Not to do it in a Clint Eastwood manner, you know, where you go to a pastoral conference and you pull your Magnum 45 and say, make my day. But where you as an individual are not ashamed of the confessional theology that your professors have taught you here at the seminary, and that you see yourself as the future leaders of this church, because you are the future leaders of this church. Some of you will move from one congregation into another and what have you, but you will always be operating under a leadership mode. Some of you may find yourself being brought into staffing positions and what have you. But I cannot imprint upon you enough that Al Berry's hope for a future confessional and scriptural church body, under the Spirit's blessing, rests with you. You will find yourself, once you graduate and are assigned, going into some sections of the church where you'll be saddened by some of the things that you hear at a pastoral conference. And you'll say, how can this be? Don't schnabelhalten. That's some of the words my grandpa taught me. When I talked too much, he'd say schnabelhalten. Don't schnabelhalten. Don't stop talking. But continue in a positive way to say to your congregations and to your brother pastors, hey, this is a fantastic strength in our church body. Let's not in any way walk away from it or in any way become ashamed of it. Another thing that I found in my five notes at the front of this abbreviated version of Walther's Long Gospel, Walther had again and again in his abbreviated version and then certainly in the large one, a fantastic concern in his students. And the thing that he was number one concerned about with his students is that they would be individuals who had a strong, vibrant faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. If I read it once, I read it 100 times as he would move along through the book. Fellows, it's got to begin with you. You have to be in the Word. You have to be close to God in prayer. You have to have a strong spirituality. And so if there's anything I'd also say to you as seminarians assembled here today, do not neglect your own personal spirituality. It's so easy to do. I remember when I graduated from the seminary, they said, well, now that you don't have to do classwork and all that, you'll have a lot of time to be in the Word and all this kind of stuff. Not so, unless you force yourself into being regularly, daily in the Word. I would have to tell you that over the past several weeks, I spent an awful lot of time in the Word, and I've spent an awful lot of time in prayer with God. In the evening before I go to sleep, I'm sure I spend a good 15 minutes just talking with God, and not just about Al Berry and Jean Berry's needs, but about the needs of our church. In that respect, also, this glitch in my life has strengthened me spiritually. And so I would say to you, and those of you who are married and have families, do not neglect personal, do not neglect family, being in the Word, staying close to the Lord, spirituality. The third thing that Walther said, and it was rather interesting, he had a reason. He had a very genuine reason why he wanted the students at the seminary to do that. The first reason was because of their own personal faith life. But he had another reason. And that's because he had a fantastic love for the congregations of this synod. If he said it once again, he said it 100 times, you will only be a blessing to the congregations you serve to the extent that you and your personal faith life are close to the Lord. And your people will sense this. They will tell that's where you are. And they will be drawn toward your leadership in becoming more spiritual themselves. So those were the three things. The other two I need not get into. But strong encouragement to you to recognize the church is really looking to you to strengthen confessional theology among us. 2, in the process, do not neglect your own personal faith life. Don't neglect it. And 3, recognize that the closer you are with the Lord yourself, the closer and the better will be your pastoral ministry at St. John's Happy Town. That's my favorite congregation, St. John's Happy Town. I don't know if there is such a thing as a happy town. So those were some of the things I saw in my reading of Walter that I wanted to share with you. I might say that about 2 weeks back, when I was meeting with the Council of Administrators at the International Center, I shared with them also this same concern, because I watch what happens at the International Center. And we crank out programs, we crank out this, we crank out that. And I said, men, when you crank out a new program, ask yourself, what is the theology undergirding it? What's the theology? And if there is no theology undergirding it, maybe you better take it and scrap it. And secondly, in your cranking out programs or cranking out projects, don't neglect your own spirituality. I get a lot of letters from pastors who say, I'm downcast and discouraged. Got one from a circuit counselor who had started to visit the pastors in his circuit, and he said, everyone that I visited was downcast and discouraged. And I wrote back to him and I said, you know, when you are downcast and discouraged, there is no better way to overcome that than with the dynamic power of God's almighty word speaking to you in the scriptures. Well, that's kind of for Walter. I can talk a little bit with you about some peripheral items in the next 5 minutes, and then I think I want to give you the opportunity to get into a question and answer mode. Glancing back over the past 2 or 3 months, we had our synodical convention. I think it was a very good convention. I would have to say that I am troubled when I find people writing and saying it was a bad convention, the wackos versus a sanity people. I think that's totally inappropriate. I kind of got a charge that ELCA sent a journalist down to watch our convention. And this journalist said to one of the people in the communication department, you know, this is the most peaceful and the most positive convention that I have covered in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So when I get together with some of these people, I'm going to, in a very clear way, say to them, hey, yeah, we had things on which we disagreed. Wait till you get to your first voters meeting. You'll find they're there too. There'll be things where people will have differences of opinion, but the important thing is that we sit down and talk about them and relate to one another as brothers and sisters in Christ. If people would say, well, what are the great things that you thought you saw coming out of this convention? I felt it was a mission emphasis convention. We admitted to ourselves that we are being sent forth by God's blessing, and that we as a church body don't just want to sit on the gospel, but we want to share the gospel with the world, both in the parishes that you will be serving, but all around the globe. I also was very much pleased with the reaffirmation of some of our theological positions. We said we as a church body do practice, believe in, close communion. We as a church body do have worship principles that we respect and that we honor with one another. Now, not everybody's doing it. It's like the congregation. If you think everybody's going to get in line in the congregation instantly, it won't happen that way. But as long as we as a church body can begin to say to ourselves, that's what we are, I believe that that will be very, very good for us as we move into the future. We have an anniversary coming, 150th anniversary of the Synod. And I really see a lot of good things coming out of that 150th anniversary. I've worked with Dr. Carl Barth on this, and Jim Bolt, who is also working with Dr. Carl Barth. And it would be my feeling that as we move into the future, this is going to be a blessing for our church body. The third thing that I listed here is the fivefold vision statement. We adopted a resolution, but we're going to have to do a lot more than that. To me, the beauty of the fivefold vision statement is its simplicity, its scripturalness, and its basics. I was watching a golf player talk over TV, and he said, emphasize the basics, emphasize the basics. I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't play golf, but it sounded pretty good to me. And to me, the fivefold vision statement that you will be carrying out to the church is, one, a church that is strongly in the Word. Two, a church body that is caring and sensitive to the needs of others. Three, a church body that looks for opportunities to share the good news in Jesus Christ with those who are around you. I find another entire arena. I used to use the jetting as an arena where I could share my faith. Now I find when I go out to the cancer center for blood work or whatever it may be, there's hardly a time that I cannot find a person with whom I can share the good news in Jesus Christ. Four, a church body that is faithful to the scriptures and the Lutheran confessions. And five, a church body that is marked by peace and unity in Jesus Christ. Basic, simple, scriptural. I put down here, we established church fellowship with Paraguay and one of the Lutheran churches in South Africa. I thought that was kind of neat. And maybe there would be some other items that you would want to ask about from the vantage point of the convention. I also need to say in the last 2 minutes that I have here, I appointed a Blue Ribbon Committee prior to the convention to really study some of the structural questions that we as a church body need to face. It was rather interesting that when I appointed that Blue Ribbon Committee, there were those who said, oh boy, you shouldn't have done that. But now that that Blue Ribbon Committee is beginning to assume its workload and responsibilities, I believe it's maybe going to be one of the most significant things. I'd hope the fivefold vision would be the most significant, but one of the most significant things that we would do. I've appointed a President's Commission on the Sanctity of Life. It seems to me that we as a church body can really stand front and center stage before the world when it comes to this entire thing of the sanctity of life. There was in September a meeting of the International Lutheran Conference in Australia. I was not able to go. Dr. Kuhn, because I was not able to be in the office, also was not able to go. But the report I get from the International Lutheran Conference is that it was a very, very good meeting. The next meeting in 2 years from now will be held here in the St. Louis area in connection with the Great Commission convocation. Just a little side humor. My secretary came in one day and, you know, this church body can just be fraught through with rumors. And am I shocking you in telling you that? My secretary came in and she said, boy, you want to hear the latest rumor? And I said, go ahead. She said, I got a call from a pastor in X district and he'd gone to a pastoral conference and they had said that you had quietly snuck off to Australia when nobody knew that you were going. And that while you were in Australia, you broke off church relations with 17 churches. Isn't that wild? I thought it was kind of cute. So I told him, I hope you straighten that out with him. Then the last thing, 100th anniversary of our entry into world missions in India, Kishnagar. Sam Nasker told me in my meeting with him last week that when he went to Kishnagar, is where Nathur began his work. If you've read any mission history, Nathur worked so hard and had no results. Finally, he had one convert, two converts. But you know, that's really a very saddening thing when you've worked that hard and you don't have any converts. I'm sure that Nathur must, being human, have felt, is the Lord really blessing my work? And Sam said when Nathur developed the bubonic plague and he's buried at Kishnagar and one son on one side of him and one son on the other, he said, we went there for one of the services of the centennial. He says, it's a big and beautiful church. Any congregation in the United States would be proud to have the church that they have at Kishnagar. And there were some 1,500 Lutheran Christians that assembled in that church to praise God for his blessings upon the work of their ministry. Nathur didn't see it, but he kept sowing and he kept pushing. And when he got discouraged, I hope And I'm trusting that he went back to the Word. But how neat it would have been if Nathan could have just somehow seen 1,500 people, not to count all of those who had gone on before and are in life everlasting, as a member of the congregation of Kish Nagiri. Well, that's my sharings with you. I guess what I'd like to let you do now is to ask any questions that you may have of me. And it's no holds barred. Even sticky wicky ones are acceptable. If they get too sticky wicky, we'll call on Dr. Kuhn. I thank God for him being in the International Center. He has been a very genuine blessing to the office of the president and also to this church. Okay, who'd like to jump in the pond first? Yes.
Dr. Barry, Gary Shoppers, good to see you.
Good to be here.
This business of discouragement among pastors, do you think that there is more of that today than there was, let's say, 20, 30 years ago? And is there some conclusion or is there some solution that that you can say to these young men as they go out? Because we talk about that at times, I didn't experience that much discouragement in the circuits in which I served, mm-hmm. and personally I didn't experience that, but I keep hearing about it, yeah. And it kind of bothers me, and I'm not sure what to say to the students about that.
All right, I don't know if I have a simple answer to that particular question, and it is a concern to me too, a very genuine concern, because I know that when the brother pastor becomes discouraged and downcast, his wife becomes discouraged, and the family becomes discouraged, and the congregation becomes discouraged. Sounds terribly simplistic, but it seems to me that at those points in time, we have to lean so heavily on the dynamic of the Word. And as brother pastors, we have to lift one another up and not be ashamed to say to another brother pastor, you know, I really am down, and this is why I'm down. And maybe the brother pastor can recognize at that point in time to lift. But it is a concern to me too. And I wish I had a simple answer outside of, you know, gain a lot of strength from the dynamic of the Word. But it must be out there. And that doesn't mean that all of you should pack your suitcases and leave the seminary now. You know, it must be out there. And I think we need to address it. Circuit counselors need to assume a much more active role in this. And I believe the district staff, the district presidents need to spend much, much more time out with the brother pastors out in their districts. When I was a district president, I took 2 days of every week, or of every month, and went out and visited brother pastors. And I just felt I needed to stay in touch with them in this way. It's a tough one. But I am getting that signal, and I know it would be a concern to you, too. Not a good answer, but at least it's the best I can do. All right. Other questions? Well, do you have any questions that you want to run past Dr. Kuhn? You know, I told you to save the tough ones for him. All right, here we have someone coming up.
Dr. Barry, thank you for being with us this morning. It's a joy to have you among us. In recent times, it's become an increasingly common practice that many calling congregations will invite candidates from the seminary to participate in some sort of an interview. And it's my understanding that this is usually worked through the office of a district president.
Yeah.
Could you give us your thoughts on this matter, and could you give some advice to those of us who may be invited to participate in an interview of this sort? Thank you.
I'm sure my answer will not be too acceptable to many people. I can understand where congregations may want to do that. But I believe that with the placement committee of the Council of Presidents and the placement committee of the seminaries, you have in that particular setting the opportunity, a congregation has the opportunity much, much more to have a pastor matched to their needs rather than just having him come in and ask him like 10 questions. So whenever in Iowa District East this question surfaced, I couldn't stop them from doing it, but as district president, I strongly discouraged it and said, why don't you trust the placement committee of the Council of Presidents, the placement committee of the seminary? They've worked with these men. They know these men. Let them do their work. So I'm not one who strongly encourages that. Now, every seminarian is going to have to make that decision on his own, but that's kind of where I'm coming from. All right? Okay. Another question. Okay.
Good morning. I was there the day of the synodical convention.
Just a little bit. I'll give it to him.
Okay. In which the issue of seminary tuition was addressed. And Dr. Johnson briefed us a little bit at his first convocation earlier this fall. Has any progress been made on that resolution, which has asked the Senate to come up with a plan to pay for our tuition?
No, I don't think we've made a great deal of progress on it. I'm sending a letter out to all the congregations on another resolution where they are asked to send money into a kitty type of thing to address these needs. That letter is just in the process of going out. I believe it's one of those things that we have not been able to grab all of those items simply because I have not been able to spend ample time with the staff and with the proper people in addressing that particular concern. I recognize that this is a toughie for you as seminarians. It's very much of a toughie. And because you come out with unbelievable indebtednesses in many cases. I remember getting a couple students into Iowa East whose indebtedness was like $20,000, $24,000. Now, how they got to that indebtedness, you know, I can't say. But be that as it may, the resolution that was adopted needs to be pursued, will be pursued, but it has not yet been actively pursued. Okay? Maybe a couple more, then I'm going to let Dr. Kuhn take over, and then you can ask all the toughies. Yes?
You, Dr. Berry, made an emphasis, and I think rightly so, on our confessional stance as Lutherans. In the short time I've been at the seminary, it seems to me, though, that can be a rather divisive issue, where some would set themselves apart and call themselves confessional Lutherans, looking at others as being something different.
Less than.
And I know in some of the professors here that I have asked concerning this, they have been a little concerned that some would set themselves apart and call themselves confessional, leaving everyone else in a state of limbo. Could you respond?
Yes, that question has surfaced out in the church also. I always like what Sam Nafsker said. Sam Nafsker said, confessional is an excellent term that we as a church body should not give up, and we should not allow anyone to take it away from us as a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I would hope that whether it's at the seminary or out in the church, that individuals would not use this term confessional as a certain shibboleth of orthodoxy, making others feel you're not as orthodox as I am because I use this term with myself. I was talking with another earlier meeting today. Even when you disagree with someone, the district president that I followed in Iowa East, and you'll have to forgive my references to it, he said, when I disagree with someone, I must always remember the purchase price that the master has placed on that person. That the master has purchased that person as well as myself with his holy precious blood and his innocent sufferings and death. And I dare not take that and push this out of the way in addressing differences or disagreements that I would have with him. So I've said out in the church, confessional is a good term. Do not use it as a divisive term within the Synod. Okay?
Dr. Berry, we have a few international Lutheran congregations which switch every 4 to 6 years between ELCA and LCMS. I was wondering if there had been any concern shown about this, especially in light of our stand on church fellowship,
yep.
and if there had been made any plans to work towards some sort of a goal on this matter.
All right. I have met with Bishop Chilstrom on this particular matter, and I have simply said to Bishop Chilstrom, let's divide it up then. This one will be Missouri, this one will be Elka, but not this switching back and forth. I think Bishop Chilstrom was a little bit hesitant to tackle that. I look forward now with Bishop Anderson again surfacing the same thing. It would be my position, the position of our mission department and what have you, that we should not continue this arrangement. We have in certain cases, for instance, like when they wanted to sign a woman vicar, we said, no, you can't do that. But I really believe in all realism, what we need to do is to simply say, well, you take Frankfurt, you take Seoul, you take so-and-so, we'll take so-and-so, and close that issue. And I have been working to that end. Okay, I'm going to let Dr. Kuhn take over at this point. And you can even sit down if you'd like to, Dr. Kuhn. I'll let my legs get back in gear here.
You want to sit over here?
All right, very good.
Dr. Kuhn has never been formally introduced to the student body in the capacity that he now serves. He was the district president for Central Illinois District for a number of years, and this past summer was elected as the first vice president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So let's also welcome Dr. Kuhn into our midst.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for the privilege of being able to be here and stand here. As I sat up here this morning, it made me think of the first time that I had chapel service here. Had to be in an evening because we could never conduct chapel service as a student in the morning. Could only be in the evening. And I remember the first time that that happened, and there was a certain amount of fear and trepidation. A lot more then than what there is to stand up here now. And I also looked out here this morning and saw Gary Schopper, who came to the microphone first, and I thought, well, if Gary made it here for a year, I can be here for a few minutes, because he and I were here on this campus, what is it, 74 years ago or 75 now? We were here at the same time, but I think if I remember correctly, he's much younger than I am. He was the year behind me. Good to be able to be here, and believe me, I don't have any other 20 minutes that I'm going to do a presentation, but I suggested to Dr. Barry that maybe it would be good for him to answer some questions, and then if you have some more, and he's saying the hard ones and I'm saying the easy ones, I would be happy to address some of those and spend some more time with you. He initially was not going to be able to be here, but because of the strength coming back so readily and so well following that those early chemo treatments, he made the decision that he was going to be able to come, and I think that for you, it was a real treat to be able to have him rather than to just have to take second place this morning and put up with me. Any other questions, any other thoughts, any other comments, anything that's heavy on your mind or your heart? I'm not talking Hebrew or Greek this morning, no. We're going to stay out of that. That's your problem. Yes, sir.
Thank you for being here. My name is Don Stoltz, and a fourth-year seminarian. My question regards the CTCR, and there's been some controversy as to what his role is and what they're doing, and are they working together with the IC, the council presidents? Is there anything happening to improve that communication or process of how we're going to address more of our theological issues in the future?
Thanks for the question. I don't think that there has been a lot that has happened immediately following the convention. Dr. Barry had referred to a number of things that were outstanding for him as far as the convention is concerned, and as we look back to the convention, we're looking back to things that happened either that affected me or things that I had an interest in and wanted to react and respond to. And then the thought immediately is, well, now we're 3 months past the convention, the ship should be fixed and we should be ready to sail totally, completely, and have this whole matter of repair taken care of. Doesn't work quite that fast. It works a lot slower. And so the concerns, I think, which were raised at the convention, there were a couple of resolutions about making changes in CTCR. I think there were one or two memorials that suggested the CTCR disband or be disbanded, and that responsibility be placed back in the hands of the two seminary faculties as it had been before. Those things were discussed, but that's not where the convention went with the matter. The convention resolved the fact that we would continue to have the CTCR, and it encouraged the CTCR to continue to get about its work. We don't move very fast in Missouri. I'm sure that for those of you who are sitting there, you think, amen. And if it's amen for you, I want to say it was amen for me too. And I've been in the business, as Richard Kemmerer used to refer to it, for 32 years now. And I've begun to realize, and I'm German and therefore I learn slow, that there are a lot of things that we can't move fast in the church because we're dealing with people. And people don't change very readily and very rapidly. So when we've been going in a direction to immediately do 180 degrees or even 140 degrees or 100 degree turn away from that is not easy. We've been with the CTCR, and I think the CTCR heard what the convention said, and I believe, having had some brief conversations with Sam Nafsker, that they will be trying to more intently get on their assignments as they have been laid out and try to get them taken care of rather than having them delayed by one issue or another. We do need to remember that except for Sam Nafsker, Jerry Jers, and Joel Leyenbauer, the other people on the CTCR are part-time. Those are individuals that come from all over the country, and they don't have the opportunity to give as much time to it. But they're working at it, and I pray that they'll be able to address more issues.
Dr. Kuhn, I'm David Ritok. I'm also a fourth-year seminarian. Dr. Barry, I just want to tell you, with or without hair, you're still more handsome than Dr. Walther. But
incidentally, friend, I had told him when he was talking about the hair that had fallen out, I just said, friend, I really hadn't noticed much difference.
My question also comes back to the action that the CTCR took prior to the convention. And I realize that until the exegetical work is finished, we really don't have an answer to this question, perhaps. But if they do, in fact, reach the opposite conclusion that they presented before the convention, what do you feel the long-term effects will be, since the documents have already been put before the church? And for many lay people, they don't understand that the CTCR is not a doctrine-making body.
And please remember that this is an opinion, because what Dr. Barry or I say, believe it or not, is not set in concrete, and it is not come out with either law or gospel. Unfortunately, when something is said, we have tremendous difficulty picking up the pieces of those words and reconstructing it in such a way so that it says something different in the minds of people than what it did when it came out initially. Regardless of how this whole matter now is going to be looked at, there will continue to be in the minds of people in our church, but this is what the CTCR said. And then we get into this we-they syndrome, and I can never really figure out who they are. Someday I want to be a part of they and them because they seem to have so much fun. They seem to be doing so many things. I think that the best thing that can come out of it is that now the CTCR will definitely sit down and again restudy the matter. We'll restudy both sides. And the CTCR, I believe, will have the opportunity in session to discuss these issues. I do have to say they felt they were up against the timeline. For whatever reason, their timeline overtook them too rapidly, and they didn't get the things done ahead of time. But that's kind of like having a term paper assigned at the beginning of the quarter and the last night before it's due, you're still trying to get it done. I think that they will sit down and they will talk with each other, and I believe that that perhaps failed to begin with. I was not a part of the CTCR at that point. I did not sit in on their meetings. I do now, but I did not then. So it's really unwise for me to say what they did or didn't do. But I do feel that it will open up the channel for communication, and they may be able to talk to each other rather than at or beyond one another, as we are sometimes so prone to do.
Good morning. Dr. Berry earlier mentioned an anniversary coming up for the Missouri Synod. The ELCA is also going to be celebrating an anniversary in 1997. What do some of their ecumenical agendas, how will they affect Missouri's relationship with the ELCA in the future? And maybe how do us as future Missouri pastors, how will we relate to the ELCA pastors in our town? What can we do maybe?
This is the first time that I am aware that ELCA will be having an anniversary celebration. And I really thank you for mentioning that, because I'm not aware of it, and I'm the chairman of the 150th Anniversary Committee for our church, but was not aware of that. As of this date, there is nothing being planned interdenominationally for one to be looking at the other, for one to be meeting with the other. And as I said, our committee, maybe some individual members are aware, but basically our committee is not aware of this celebration happening there. As far as you, in whatever you're going to graduate and whatever year the Lord says, you are mine and I want you to serve my people in St. John's Happy Town. Mine's St. John's by the water tower, but at least we got St. John's. I think that the way the church bodies are going to relate, or the way you as pastors are going to relate, is going to depend very much on you as an individual. In one of the three parishes that I've served, there was ELCA congregation in the town. And while Pastor Carlson and I did not try to do anything together as far as congregationally speaking, obviously no worship services or anything like that, we were very good friends. And we could sit and talk with each other. And I guess I want to focus on that one more time, and as I focused on it with CTCR, I think we do a good job at talking at each other. But I'm not so sure that we, whether it's family, or church, or wherever it is, we don't always do a good job talking with each other. I'm suggesting that when you graduate, you need to be in conversation with those brothers. And I think that those brothers have a lot to learn from us, and I think we can learn some things from them. Now, please do not go out of here today and say, well, the first VP was here, and he said we should get together and have a lot of prayer stuff together. I didn't say that. I said I think we can talk with each other and learn from each other. I am told by those brothers that they look to us as being the confessional church, and they're saying, don't give it up. As I look at the ELCA and some of the things that they do, I think that they have a much more concerned social ministry type of program than what we do. And if we're going to follow through with that one part of the vision statement where we're going to be more people sensitive, then I think we have to be more concerned about the needs of people. Again, I did not say give all your offerings to Lutheran Rural Relief. I am saying that we need to be sensitive to people, and I think perhaps we could learn that from them. I'm suggesting that you talk with the brothers and don't treat them as though they're ham in a synagogue picnic.
As the director of vicarage, I get a chance to visit a lot of congregations, visiting the vicarages and talking with vicarage supervisors. And this past fall, one thing that I've gathered from talking with them at mealtime is a real concern about Fort Wayne Seminary. Wither Fort Wayne. How can we keep it open? What are the numbers? What about the new president? We here at St. Louis would be interested to hear about our sister seminary as well.
Thanks for the question. And I imagine that rumors are flying, and maybe you don't get them here as readily as we get them in other places in the church, but again, there are a lot of rumors flying around in the church in reference to Fort Wayne. One of which has been, again, they, whoever they are trying to close Fort Wayne. I have the privilege of now sitting on that Board of Regents. And believe me, brothers and sisters, there is no intent. There has been no conversation about, as far as the Board of Directors is Board of Regents is concerned, that school is going to close. It is our intent to make that school as strong as we can, and it is our intent that that school will continue about its business of preparing pastors for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It would be foolish to say Fort Wayne doesn't have its problems, but at the same time, I don't think that there is any problem so great that the Lord and I can't take care of it together if He does most of the work. And I think with Fort Wayne, the big challenge at this point in time is students and money. And I am saying to everyone who asks the question similar to yours, and when I have an opportunity to speak about it, please encourage your people to not make a decision to go to St. Louis because they don't want to go to Fort Wayne. Don't make the decision to go to St. Louis because they're hearing bad things about Fort Wayne. Make the decision of going to the school that you want to go to, but don't make that decision out of negative reasons. The first year class, I think, is 53. It was 54, but then David Schmiel said that that was the wrong number, and the last I heard it was 53. So we're down, obviously, about 40 or 50 from where we should be and where we need to be. But I think that with some real aggressive efforts in the area of recruitment, and I'm really leaning quite heavily on a man called Roosevelt Gray to be doing that, I think that there is no reason why the seminary can't come back. I'm a graduate of these hallowed halls, and I give thanks to God for the education that I was privileged to receive sitting at the feet of some of the men that I sat at. I graduated in 1963, not all that good of a time in the history of this institution, only about 11 years before the fatal day. But this institution, following 1974, has come back and is stronger than what it was prior to 1974, and I give thanks to God for that. Fort Wayne can do the same thing with the help and by the grace of God. And I haven't read anything in the scripture where he's indicated to me that he's going to withhold that blessing from Concordia Seminary at Fort Wayne. But the church, and we are all part of that, that's not they, that's not them, that's not the folks back home, that's not the district presidents, that's not the faculty, that's us. We, the church, need to do all that we can to speak positively about it and encourage our people to continue to support, sending students and also providing dollars, which are so vitally necessary. Fort Wayne is the general condition of the place is not as good as it was way in the past. But I'm suggesting that it's better than it was a year or two ago, and I'm praying that God will continue to lead us who have responsibilities of a variety of ways, that we will be able to lead that place so that it will continue to come back and be every bit as strong as this seminary in St. Louis. I am committed to believe that the church needs two seminaries. Please don't hear me saying that they have to be in St. Louis and Fort Wayne. But please don't hear me say, that means you're going to get rid of the Fort Wayne campus. I didn't say that either. I don't think the geographic location is that important. But the church needs two seminaries for check and balance as far as what happens on those campuses. Now, where this campus, where the seminary is going to be 10 years from now, I don't know. I had a lot of people in central Illinois who were very unhappy when it moved to Fort Wayne. But then it really only went back home because that's where it initially started, was in Fort Wayne. I don't think the place is that important, but we need to have two. And I pray that God will let us continue to have two in order that both can be about their work of producing pastors for the church. As far as the election of the president is concerned, that date has been set for February. It's either the 16th or the 17th. I think it's the 17th, but please don't put that in writing. It's one of those two dates that that is set for. The deadline for receiving nominations is now passed, and the committee made up of three members of the faculty and two members of the Board of Regents are beginning to do their preliminary work with those names, and ultimately it will be brought to the electors then on February, I think it's the 17th. And the electors, in case you're not aware of that, there are four electors when electing a seminary or college president. The president of the synod has one vote. The board of regents of the school collectively has one vote. The board for higher education has one vote. And then the district president, who has been appointed to the board of regents by the council of presidents, has the fourth vote. I will say that the Constitution Committee has been asked to rule on whether it is the district president appointed by the council of presidents or whether it is the geographical president in which district the school resides. This is being questioned and they haven't ruled, but the four electors are those four, would be those four votes. Well, thanks much for having us. On behalf of Dr. Barry, I would like to say to you that it's been a privilege for him to be here and a privilege for me to be here, and we look forward to the opportunity perhaps of being back again next year to address the same group. I do want to say that you are a neat-looking bunch of young people, and I really enjoy being able to look out and say, pastors, our church, a couple of years. I remember sitting right over there, and this dates me, of course, but call service used to be in this place, believe it or not. In the district president's, 35 of us used to get crowded on 30 chairs right there in that section. And the first time I walked in and sat down, and I was sitting next to Dr. Alvin Coleman from Southern Illinois, and I looked at the class of individuals receiving calls, and I said, Al, they sure look like young guys. And Al looked back at me and he said, and they get younger every year. Thanks for having us. God's blessings to you in your continuation of ministry.